Welcome to the Hadavar Messianic Ministries audio presentation of the devotional study series entitled The First Regathering, Modern Israel. In this portion of our study, Hadavar Messianic Ministries director, Pastor Bob Morris, will continue tracing important events in the history of the modern state of Israel. Pastor Bob will continue the class by discussing significant events that occurred in the year 2000. Following the teaching session, you'll be given information explaining how to contact Hadavar Messianic Ministries with your questions and to order additional resources. Now let's begin lesson number 16. Here's Pastor Bob Morris.
Let's begin lesson 16 of our class, The First Regathering, Modern Israel. We left off at the end of lesson 15 by coming up to the year 2000. We went through the major events of the year 1999, and now we're starting with the year 2000 and the major events that happened in this year. Let's begin in the spring of the year 2000 with the IDF being ordered out of Lebanon, the Israel Defense Forces being ordered out of Lebanon. Prime Minister Ehud Barak won unanimous cabinet backing for this decision. It was his often repeated promise to end Israel's long military presence in Lebanon. The decision was read by Cabinet Secretary Isaac Herzog. He reaffirmed the government's goal of reaching an agreement with Syria that would facilitate a withdrawal, but emphasized that Israel is determined to bring its troops back to the international border by July, even without Syria's blessing. Barak vowed to the ministers that the Israeli Defense Forces would be deployed along the international border with Lebanon by mid-year, and added that, quote, "I don't advise anyone to test our reaction once we are deployed there." Now, the Arab League blasted Israel's withdrawal plan. They condemned the withdrawal. In a joint statement, ministers of the 22-member Arab League said they opposed a unilateral Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon and warned that such a move by Israel could lead to war. Their statement said the Arabs strongly condemned Israeli occupation, the recent airstrike, and the vicious Israeli threats to destroy Lebanon. It defended the Lebanese guerrillas fighting in southern Lebanon, saying that the resistance is a result of the occupation and not its cause. Now, those are contradictory statements, to condemn the withdrawal and then to blame the withdrawal. So, in other words, Israel is blamed if they do damned if they do withdraw and damned if they don't withdraw. So the obvious inconsistency of the Arab position reveals the self-serving nature, the hypocritical attitude toward Israel that they possess. No matter what Israel does, she is criticized, whether she stays in Lebanon or whether she leaves Lebanon. Well, on May 23, 2000, the IDF withdrew from Lebanon and the SLA, the South Lebanese Army, collapsed. So Israel's 18-year-long military presence in Lebanon came to an end Tuesday, May 23rd, 2000, as the sudden collapse of the South Lebanese army forced the IDF to conduct a hasty retreat from outposts throughout the security zone. One after another, South Lebanon army outposts in Lebanon crumbled, and with them Israel's plan for a relatively organized IDF withdrawal. Hezbollah took control of the central part of the security zone and large parts of the western zone, mostly without firing a shot. The sequence of events unfolded like this. Israel pulled out of three of its outposts in the 1,940 square kilometer, the 750 square mile zone, handing them over to its proxy militia, the South Lebanon Army. Then the South Lebanon Army began to desert positions under fire from pro-Iranian guerrillas from Hezbollah. Hezbollah is, of course, the party of God. As hundreds of SL men deserted, surrendered, and fled, the Hezbollah fighters advanced using crowds of Lebanese civilians as their cover. In 3 days, the militia had folded in two-thirds of the occupation zone. On Wednesday, May 24, 2000, for the first time in many years, there was absolute quiet along the northern border. The moment the last IDF soldiers crossed the border into Israel, Hezbollah put aside its weapons. Although armed IDF and Hezbollah fighters were seeing each other for the first time at distances as close as 5 or 10 meters, there were no incidents. Military intelligence believes that Hezbollah will initially refrain from launching terror attacks against Israel from the northern border. In time, however, intelligence expects the organization to begin sending Palestinian terrorists against Israel with Syria's help. On May 25, 2000, Beirut dispatched security forces into southern Lebanon for the first time, as Israel announced it had completed its redeployment to the international border. The Lebanese military presence included army, police, and intelligence forces. United Nations peacekeepers also took up positions in the south. They were backed by armored personnel carriers and a helicopter. Prime Minister Ehud Barak called on Beirut to fully comply with UN Security Council Resolution 425 and urged the Lebanese to establish their sovereignty over the south. Barak said that in Israel's view, Lebanon and Syria would henceforth bear full responsibility for events in the south. He repeated warnings about massive retaliation for any attacks on Israel's sovereignty, on Israel's citizens or soldiers. The northern border remained quiet after four days of celebrations by Hezbollah and the villagers along the fence separating Israel and Lebanon. The Hezbollah and Syria were surprised by Israel's May withdrawal from Lebanon because the militant Islamic organization was preparing a massive military campaign against the IDF to coincide with a July withdrawal. Military Intelligence Chief Amos Malka told the Knesset Foreign Affairs and Security Committee this information. So Hezbollah in Syria wanted to make it appear that they drove Israel out of Lebanon with this massive military move. But Israel's quick withdrawal ended and short-circuited that plan. Let's move on to July 2000 and the Camp David talks. Next major event in 2000. Mideast peace talks between Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Barak and U.S. President Bill Clinton and Yasser Arafat collapsed on July 26th of 2000 after 2 weeks of negotiations. Both sides met and they knew it was an all-or-nothing situation. A senior Israeli military official predicted that if the summit is a dead end, there will be war. Robert Malley, a Clinton staffer, shared the reason why the president went to Camp David. The reason why we went to Camp David was that we had every indication that by September the Intifada was going to happen. Note that statement. Participants agree that Clinton did a masterful job of negotiation and possessed a stunning knowledge of Jerusalem. However, Arafat kept pulling out new demands. And then in the end, there wasn't any version that Arafat was prepared to accept. Arafat made the decision to reject any all-embracing agreement. He was promised, orally, 96% of the West Bank. The offer included incredibly far-reaching proposals besides the forfeiture of the West Bank. Barak was willing to divide Jerusalem and to allow Arafat to proclaim the capital of his independent state to be in Jerusalem. Palestinian control would have been extended over the Muslim and Christian quarters of Jerusalem, including the Church of the Holy Sepulchre. Palestinian control, but not sovereignty, would have been granted over the Temple Mount. Now, Arafat never offered a counterproposal to this very, very generous extension of compromise. And this behavior incensed President Clinton. Upon his return to Gaza, Arafat began speaking in inflammatory terms in Arabic about taking Jerusalem. And yet at the same time, he was talking peace in English. And the Intifada to come was fueled by such rhetoric. On July 25th, 2000, the UN announces the completion of the Israeli withdrawal from Lebanon. The United Nations Interim Force in Lebanon, UNIFIL, UNIFIL, was expected to move in and fill the vacuum left by the IDF. 8,000 UN troops were expected to comprise this peacekeeping force. And so the UN confirmed Israel's withdrawal in full to the border that UN mapping experts had set. So Israel has fully complied with the UN's request to withdraw from Lebanon. That's from July 25th. Let's move to September 28th. September 28th, 2000. Remember, I mentioned earlier that President Clinton's team knew that by September the Intifada was going to happen. Well, what happened at the very end of September? September 28th, 2000, Likud Chairman Ariel Sharon visits the Temple Mount. Now, Ariel Sharon announced his plans to visit the Temple Mount on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, a few days in advance of the visit. Now, Israeli intelligence gathering resources had been told, they'd been informed, and they determined that Ariel Sharon's visit to the Temple Mount would not generate unrest or disturbances. Public Security Minister Shlomo Ben Ami coordinated the visit with Yibril Rayub, the head of PA Preventive Security Forces. Rayub told Ben Ami that if Sharon did not enter the mosques, there was no reason for concern. Sharon would state later that he never intended to enter Al-Aqsa Mosque or the Dome of the Rock. That wasn't in his plans at all. And so security considerations had been examined, and the conclusion was that there was no reason to prevent the Likud chairman from visiting the site. So Mr. Sharon toured the Temple Mount, surrounded by over 1,000 Israeli security guards. And then the Al-Aqsa Intifada began, right on Arafat's schedule, right on schedule in September, exactly when the Clinton team knew that it would occur. So this leaves little room for doubt that this was a spontaneous intifada. Just after Sharon left the Temple Mount compound, a demonstration ensued. 25 Israeli policemen and 4 Muslim rioters were injured. Now, in a frank admission, one WAF official later described the rioters as, quote, those who came here to cause trouble and not to pray. The demonstrations quickly spread to Judea, Samaria, and Gaza. IDF outposts and Israeli civilians came under attack from stone-throwing youths, armed Tanzim, and even Palestinian Authority security forces. Now, the U.S. State Department blamed the violence on Sharon's visit. Interesting, in light of the fact that they knew that the Intifada was scheduled for September. The French government issued a statement condemning the visit as a deliberate provocation. Sharon rejected the accusation, stating, quote, the disturbances are part of an overall premeditated campaign which began 10 days ago near Netzarim and spread from there to Jerusalem and Judea and Samaria. Sharon asserted that any Israeli has a right to visit the Temple Mount. He publicly stated that any Arab could visit Yad Vashem, the Holocaust memorial, without permission. Israeli analysts felt that Palestinian extremists had been looking for any excuse to initiate hostilities over Al-Aqsa. Yair Darwish, a Palestinian professional, stated that the Palestinian people were so frustrated by the failing peace talks that they were primed to explode. Sharon was the match, but there was already gasoline poured all over the situation, he stated. The Mitchell Report of May 4, 2001 would state that its investigations determined that the riots did not break out as a result of Ariel Sharon's visit to the Temple Mount. The two sides seemed close to a ceasefire on Saturday, but then a tragic event ignited the flames even further. In Gaza on Saturday, a French TV crew filmed an Arab man and his frightened 12-year-old son, Rami Aldoura, caught in a crossfire. They were huddling behind a small, low stone wall. The boy was hit by a bullet and died in his father's arms. The father was also wounded and in shock. An IDF review of the footage concluded that the two were likely hit by IDF fire, but noted that Israeli forces could not directly see the two of them. The IDF was returning fire on a Palestinian machine gun nest immediately behind them. The tragedy inflamed the Palestinians, but also Israeli Arabs who took to the streets as well. There were riots in Jaffa, Haifa, and Nazareth. And these internal riots stunned the Israeli police by their size and intensity. Israeli sources claim that Arafat met on Friday, the day before, at his Ramallah office with leaders of the Tanzim, the Fatah's youth paramilitary group. The Tanzim are led by a man named Marwan Barghouti. Those present were given to understand by Arafat that there was a need to continue the disturbances in a way that would result in a significant number of fatalities among both Israelis and Palestinians. And at the very same time, Arafat was promising Prime Minister Ehud Barak that he would act in order to return calm to the streets, Arafat saying one thing in private and another thing to the Israelis. Now, on the day that the Intifada broke out, an event occurred that showed very clearly that there was media bias very evident in the media's covering of the situation in the Middle East. On the day that the Intifada broke out, a young man named Tuvia Grossman was riding in a taxi to visit the Western Wall. He was unwittingly